Okay, this coming Shabbos is going to have the honor and privilege in Chutzlar. It's of going through Parshas Naso, which begins with the continuation of where we left off in Parshas Bamidbar. It seems like eons ago before we received the Torah. And now all of a sudden we continue with where we were with B'nai Gershon and B'nai Merari, having met B'nai Kahas at the end of last week's Parsha, when we were involved in the discussion of how the different families match up, what is it that they're supposed to do, and how big were the families. So we're told in this week's parashah, B'shem Mostif Gedu Eis Klei Mishter Maris Masa'am, with the names they should count, to which the Baal HaTurim explains that the Levim were told to be counted, and to be assigned specific items to be carried. And yet that lesson, U'B'shem Mostif Gedu, is only mentioned in regard to the B'nai Merari. And why is that the case? What's the message? So Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal explains that Merari, whose job it was to carry the beams, symbolize those who support Torah. Those who support Torah deserve a special hakaras hatov about their donation, and thus we credit them for playing their roles, each one in his place. Therefore, it's B'nai Merari that get the mention over here. We're also introduced to the idea of ish kisista ishto, when a person suspects his wife, and this leads us into the process of the sota. And Rashi goes ahead and he says that word siste, which means a suspicion. Rashi comes along and explains that people don't commit adultery unless they have a lapse in sanity. But if that's the case, then why would we ever be held chayiv? Aren't people who are insane exempt from mitzvahs? So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz famously describes that while one who sins may be exempt, because he or she is the status of a shaita, kisista ishto, he or she is chayiv because who allowed them to become close to sinning in the first place? And that is the challenge over here. We're also told of the parsha of the Nazir, which follows the parsha of the sota, and the Gemara explains that kol haroa sota mikil kula yazir atzmo menayim. When you see the sota in her embarrassment, that's when you take a situation where you go to the other extreme. So Rav Shechta would remind us that these two sections, Nazir and sota, are juxtaposed in opposition to the world of normalcy, because normally we go against extremism. However, when we see and hear about preetzes, it's important for us to go to the other extreme to offset the improper influence of society. Rav Shechta would often add to us that we live in that generation of instant communication, and everyone around the world is notified immediately about all the ganavim and all the sotos, all the people who steal, and all the cases of adultery. We don't just see one sota, we become aware of many sotos. And so although under normal conditions it wouldn't be healthy for us to follow an extreme path in life, in our circumstances extreme measures are recommended. This recommendation is true not only in the area of Bein Adam LaMakom, it's also true in the area of Bein Adam LaChaver. We're surrounded with many who cheat in business, they cheat on their taxes, they cheat on the sales tax, and we should be careful not only to be honest and follow the law, we should bend over backwards to make sure we don't follow these extremely improper practices of our society. Kol haroa sota b'kol kula yazir atzmo. And that's what we're told at the next section, Zos Toras HaNazir B'yom Malos Nizro. Right? This is the story of the Nazir. At the day he's done, he has to shave his hair. Right? And why is the shaving of his hair serve as a means of raising his status in Kedusha? So Rabbi Yosef Leib Bloch, that tells the Rosh Hashiva, as Zatzal noted, that sometimes it's the simplest of actions that have the greatest effect. Here the Nazir could give or listen to strong words. It's the simplest of actions, a haircut that makes the Nazir look back at his course of life differently and make changes that last long after the Naziris is over. That's one of the things he needs to highlight. Moshe Rabbeinu is told, Kol Sevarchu Es B'nei Yisrael, this is how you should give the bracha to B'nei Yisrael. Now why does this section of Berkas Kohanim come after the section of the Nazir? What's the message over here that we're supposed to take from that situation? So Rabbi Lam Zatzal, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lam Zatzal, who's Nifta this week, explains that a Nazir is unique insofar as he's commanded to abstain from wine. And that abstention, which is the best prevention of intoxication, is a prelude to peace. And why is that? So Rabbi Lam explained that the lasting peace is apparent only in reality without the illusions of self-intoxicated haze. Right? So when one removes the status of intoxication in his midst, there can be a sense of shalom. And so that's why we say, Kosevarchu, right? Get rid of the haze over your eyes, and then you can come to achieve lasting peace. We're also told, God says, when the Kohanim go ahead and put my name on B'nai Yisrael, I'll give them a bracha. So the Brisker Rav once noticed two Hasidim who were davening with him, and wondered why they were. And the two Hasidim wondered why are we waiting for two Kohanim to be brought for Birchas Kohanim, and why is that not a Tircha de Tzibura? So the Brisker Rav turned to the Hasidim and he said, "Look, guys, neither of you would consider it a Tircha to wait in line for hours to wait for a bracha from your Rebbe. So how could it be a Tircha to receive the bracha that Hashem promises? Samu Hashemia al Bnei Yisrael v'ani avarchem. HaKadosh Baruch is certainly bigger than your Rebbe." Right? So is that certainly not a Tircha de Tzibura? What would you possibly be worried about? After that section of Birchas Kohanim, where we read the long, long section of the Nesiim, and we're told, Vayibiyom Kalos Moshe Lakim Es HaMishkan. And Rashi comments and tells us that the word Kalos comes from the word Kala, because on the day of the establishment of the Mishkan, Bnei Yisrael like a Kala going to the Chuppah. So Rav Shach Zatzal comes ahead and mentions that while for Moshe Rabbeinu this was the day of the completion of the Mishkan, Bnei Yisrael saw it as the beginning of responsibility for their relationship. And now they had a structure to maintain and to grow from within onward. That's the big message over here. And we're told, Vayaviu es Karbanam, they each brought their Karban, and it was pointed out that Parshas Naso is the longest Parsha because it repeats the sections of the writings of the Nesiim 12 times. So why is it necessarily to repeat the same lesson 12 times over? So in the past, we've quoted from Rav Govach Zatzal, the founder of Keren Biavne, of the Hesder movement, who explained that if you examine the Midrashim, you discover that the motivation behind each Nasi's Korban was different and unique. The great journalist Ivan Rahab Meir added, in the name of Rav Kook Zatzal, that each one's connection to their Korbanos, to his or her Korban, is similar to each of our connections to the Torah. That is to say, that while the Torah may be studied by a different person, our unique imprint would be lost without its existence in the Torah. Each of us has to put our imprint into the Torah, and says it's therefore crucial for us to know the uniqueness in each intent. We learn that, therefore, we also have to go back and review within that great energy and that great context as well. Finally, in the Haftorah this week, we're going to be introduced to an incredible individual whose name was Manoach, and as we meet Manoach and his wife, we also see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu insisted that they figure themselves out, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to go ahead and get them to sort of figure out. So he sends a malach to Hatzalfunis, or Hatzalfuni as we call her, and Manoach also wanted to make sure that this is indeed the case. So the malach comes ahead and he goes ahead and talks to them, and then he goes up inside the fire and he disappears. And then in the next pasuk we're told that the malach didn't come back anymore. Then after the malach didn't come back, Oz yada Manoach. Then Manoach realized that he was a malach Hashem. I think that statement, Oz yada Manoach, should have been a pasuk before, when it says that Manoach saw the malach go up in the fire. Isn't the fact that you see a malach going up to Shemayim in a fire, isn't that a dead giveaway that that's a supernatural person? Why do you wait until the person didn't come anymore, didn't come to visit? So Binyamin Eisenberger Shlita explains that there's a deeper level of interpretation here, not to accept the hashkafa from every showman in the business. As even today we see people who donate huge sums of money to people who perform all sorts of tricks in the name of religion. However, the greatest trick they seem to perform is the ability to keep coming back more and more to collect more and more money. The greatest people in the realm of the supernatural, so to speak, show to get the message out, the message of HaKadosh Baruch Hu out, and then they move on. So when the Malach didn't come back, Manoach realized he wasn't a showman, he wasn't Harry Houdini. Oz yada Manoach ki Malach Hashem Tzvakosu. Then he realized that he was dealing with an honest-to-goodness Malach, and that's the way he was going to proceed. We in life always look for extra signs and extra symbols, but those symbols have to be from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if we go ahead and figure out what the difference is between a symbol from Hashem and something that is not from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then by definition we'll be able to grow to experience great things. We are so looking forward to Sechazenu Einenu B'Shuvcha L'Tzion, where we too will get the chance to see the Karbanos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. May we all be meriting that speedily in our day. Shabbat Shalom to all.